I love that, and I think I've said this to Casey before, and we never had a chance.
Cardio burns fat to bet it down
and cello song the books, and I think I did remember the place where I first heard that, and it's that crazy series. I'm going to forget what it's called. I'm going to forget his name too. This is going to torture me here. Holy cow. I can picture him, and I can't. Now I can't even. And he's such a strange actor. James Spader. What is that crazy series where he's like a criminal mastermind of some ilk? The thing has been going on for like, it feels like 10 years. anybody help me here with the blacklist. There it is. The Blacklist. Thank you. I think that's where I heard it. Where you read Reddington. That's right. It's the show somehow lives on. It's one of those series that you, like that Western series with the sheriff in Wyoming, that all of a sudden it shows up, the new episodes show up, even though you think the show's been, you know, dead for years. it's very funny. But I think that's where I first heard that. And then I went and looked it up, and it's on a tremendous album, like a compilation album called the elevator's not going all the way to the top today. Dark Was the Night, and I got the I remember getting the CD. And then, you know, by the way, speaking of which, the process by which Tina has got us cleaning out tons and tons of closets and whatnot. One amazing thing that has occurred to me, depending on your musical tastes, you started out and you bought albums, and you know, and I've got hundreds of albums, and then you bought cassettes because the car. The next thing you knew, you had a Walkman or you had the cassette for the car, and then the CDs. You know, which was improved. You know, an improved version of the cassettes, And now you're buying a lot of these albums for your collection and your phone. That actually would be a great question. That would be like one of those great Twitter memes or series of responses. What albums do you have on vinyl, cassette, CD and digital, the superfecta of album purchase? Oh, and Dan Hart is saying 8 tracks. To throw in 8 tracks. That's the pentafecta. That was pretty good. Good job, Dan. I love it. Yeah. So all of this is to say that I'm vamping before I give Casey a number to call. A couple. We're going to talk to Blaine Wright, who I wanted to get in the wake of another Twist of Fate and the Longacre Mile win. So we're going to talk to Blaine. He was going to join us at the top of the hour, but he's got a, somewhere he was on his way home. So we're going to get him once he settles in. So Blaine Wright will join us in a few minutes. And I told you Ed DeRosa as well. And we're trying one other. I'm going to try to get one other visitor in that I hinted at and promised. So we'll see if we can't do that. Let me also get a couple of things. What else that we didn't get done the last couple of days? I didn't mention the Mr. Prospector from the weekend. Actually, there were two stakes at Monmouth over the weekend. The Mr. Prospector and Farron Peterson, she has been a sensation this summer. And, you know, we talked to her earlier in the Monmouth meet. She has really had a phenomenal season. What a bold move. And of course, Julie Crone's part in it, you know, taking her on as a agent. So it's just a great story. And she ends up winning the stake on Saturday at Monmouth, the Mr. Prospector on Share the Ride, and Antonio Arriaga sent out. So a very nice. There you go, Case. I'm sorry. Nice story. One of the summer's best stories, Farron Peterson. And of course, the bug is gone. And she just has marched right on, the weight allowance, not a big deal when it comes to, you know, what she's doing. She's made it. It's not a question of going to make it. This is really everything that Julie Crone said about her and everything she talked about herself has really come to pass. I mean, very impressed. Got to mention the win by Bronx Beauty, Anthony Margata. This one for 2W Stables. And this was a considerable upset because Royal Charlotte was 3-5. And Bronx Beauty, you know, took control with about a half mile to go and powered away, and Royal Charlotte could not get to her. So Bronx Beauty, an upsetter in the regret. That was on Sunday at Monmouth. What else? We'll talk to Blaine about the Long Acres Mile in a few minutes, just a little bit. And I can mention that A Little Less Talk won that Emerald Distaff as well on Thursday. And, of course, we didn't get a chance to recap this because we weren't on with you on Friday. And those other – actually, the other stakes on Thursday as well. But A Little Less Talk, Radina Barrett sent out this one. And Warlock Stables homebred to win the Emerald Distaff. The other two stakes from Thursday that I haven't mentioned, get these in too. How about the Dueling Grounds Derby and Oaks? You know, we had talked to Stidham and Micheline, you know, had been projected, and that was a nice performance. That was pretty impressive, Micheline. Managing to run down Harvey's Little Goyle, who was looking, you know, like a winner. It's so tricky to read Kentucky Downs in the stretch because, you know, the camera, the way the camera moves position on you, essentially. And then, you know, you think, okay, whoever's in control is going to power home, and next thing you know, there's another, you know, 200 yards for horses to run when the camera resets. And Micheline under Rosario, who timed it beautifully, and you got 10-1 And I know some of the listeners absolutely got a piece because I heard from you. So well done. And Mike Stidham with the Godolphin Homebred out of Panty Raid. Nice Bernardini filly. And, you know, Harvey's the nice performance by Harvey's Little Goyle. In the meantime, Bill Mott was seemingly going to looked at a point like, you know, Mott was going to sweep because Moon Over Miami for Jane Lyon, very happy for Jane to win the Dueling Grounds Derby. And Castellano with a extended sweeping move and Moon Over Miami, and you got a nice price on him too. 7-1. This was one of those races that at Kentucky Downs, and you get a lot of them. Favoritism was wavering between three horses. Shamrocket, who ended up going off at 9-2. Bama Breeze ended up going off favored, 4-1. And Peace Achieved was just under 5-1. So three horses, essentially, and also Jolting Joe, who was seemingly a kind of a mojo horse that a lot of people reached for. So Moon Over Miami for Bill Mott and for Jane Lyon, Summer Wind, and Javier was aboard Castellano, Moon Over Miami, who's gotten good. Definitely has gotten good. And I think that was the was there anything else that we hadn't from the other day? The rest of them, the Saturday stuff we talked about, we're going to talk about today's card with Ed in the last half hour. We got you, yeah, we got the Woodbine out of the way. And, oh, you know what I did? I guess I'll do it with Brian Aragone probably tomorrow. But we never went through the Canterbury sequence from last week. That was fun, actually. It was the stakes sequence. I'll save that for Brian. All right. And mentioning Blaine Wright, who's going to join us next. All right. So we'll talk to him about another twist of fate. The Scat Daddy, who came off a long layoff to win the mile. And nice to. As I look through. As we look through for where is that chart? Here we go. Yeah, whenever I have to go, there's, you know, whatever the prime track is that we're dealing with at any one time, let's say it's Saratoga and Del Mar, you know, Kentucky Downs, that all, you know, I keep them, you know, fairly distinct. And then the catch-all stakes from the rest of the country. And so I always got to go, there it is, got to go reaching through, and here is another twist of fate. And, you know, we were trying to come up with a price the other day because here, you know, another twist of fate had been sidelined since the Preakness last year. And so, you know, at the short number that we expected, and he ended up going off at 6-5. Not an unattractive number, honestly, in retrospect. And Blaine Wright joins us, and another twist of fate comes back, and off that kind of a layoff, wins the Grade 3 Long Acres Mile. Blaine, congratulations.
Hey, thanks so much, Steve. Appreciate you having me on.
No, not at all. And we were excited just to see him back in the entries. And you must have felt good about how he was coming back to, you know, to run him in this spot.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, it's a long time coming. You know how horses can be. They're very fragile at times. And we had some setbacks here and there. And cost us a month, cost us 2 months, things like that. Nothing real, real major after his first initial comeback and whatnot. Just took, you know, kind of some things that just drives a guy crazy sometimes. So, you know, he once he got back and got over everything initially, man, he was just like clockwork every 6-7 days. And he threw out some outstanding workouts at us. And, you know, we were looking at a couple possible different races. And ultimately, they chose the Long Acres Mile. And so we just headed on up I-5 and gave him, you know, 2 or 3 gallops over the surface and led him across there. And, you know, he performed like we all thought he should. And I think there was some in the tank.
Well, he comes back and, you know, immediately posts a, you know, nice 92 buyer. He, when he left last year and off the series of preps for the classic season, you know, the El Camino Real and the Sunderland Derby and the Lexington and then the Preakness Try, you know, he was running, you know, those kinds of numbers. So to come right back and immediately off of the break to kind of get a, you know, a toehold that, you know, at the same level, come back as good as he left, essentially. That's a good sign. You talk about winning a Long Acres Mile, Blaine, because, you know, whenever we have conversations with Pacific Northwest horsemen, it's one of those races that is really important. And in fact, we reached out last Thursday in advance. And we talked to Frank Lucarelli, who, with as many wins as he's got in his career, he's looking for that elusive win in the Long Acres Mile. But talk about it, adding it to your resume.
Well, you know, Frank's you know, one of my best friends in the world. And, you know, him and I, we lived together in California for all 8, 10 years. And, you know, I consider him a dear, close friend of mine. And, you know, that's one of the things that we talked about this year, is that one of us needed to knock off that, check that bucket list for us. And I said to our local newspaper guys that, you know, anybody associated with Northwest Racing, whether it's through Portland Meadows, Old Long Acres, New Emerald Downs, Hastings Park, anyone associated in the Northwest with racing there, that's our signature race. And, you know, it's tough to even get a horse to that can handle being in the race, let alone the opportunity to win it. You know, I've been fortunate enough to, I think I've run 5 or 6 times in it, and we've run, you know, we've been runner-up the last 2 years and came awfully close last year, and only to have our hopes and dreams snapped on the wire. So, you know, to win it this year, fantastic for me. I'm a young guy, but I'm certainly proud to be able to bring home a trophy to my dad and my mom. You know, my dad came there in the mid-60s and been a fixture on that circuit ever since. And, you know, I think the best he ever did was fifth. And so it's awfully nice to have your family involved in it. And, you know, I always said that I'd win it for my peers, too. You know, there's a lot of people that are pulling for you when you're out there on the road and you're representing, and, you know, real important to win a race like that for me.
Well, and, you know, you talk about your father, and last year when you got beat, it was by Mark Glatt, who is just as important to him, and Ron, and, you know, you see the names of the Belvoirs involved, and Pewich, and, I mean, one after another, Tom Wenzel and Jim Penny. It's such a landmark race for people that, you know, that are in the sport in the region, and it can't be overemphasized. And, you know, people in New York, you know, we've heard Chad Brown talk about, you know, winning a Travers, and Mike Rapoli for years talked about winning a Travers in the Belmont, that it was preferable to him to even to a Derby. It's got that kind of fixture and level of achievement and importance in the lives of horsemen in the region.
Yep. Yeah, for sure. I mean, I can remember telling somebody this time, my first recollection of, I met Dick Mandela for the first time face to face at Del Mar this summer, and I told him that You know, I remember when he brought Bad and Big up there. I was probably 3 or 4 years old, and this huge horse comes off the van, and the white pillow wraps and the, you know, the cotton around his halter, and then I was just in awe. And every single year, you know, Whittingham brought a horse up there and win it, and Gary Stevens and all the Northwest ties up there. So certainly a lot of prestige, and, you know, big sigh of relief finally, and look to try to get my second one. You know, I'm going to be looking for the next big horse.
Well, Bad and Big, 1978, and Shoe was aboard for Mr. and Mrs. Buck Wynn, and you know, Whittingham came up and won with Judge Angelucci, with Gary Bays aboard, and yeah, you that's a good portion of this too. It's the kind of race that would be, you know, a showcase for, you know, the biggest names, the riders as well, that would come to town and, you know, come to Long Acres and now Emerald. I mean, look at that list, Pinkay and, Sandy Hawley and, you mentioned Stevens, you know, Eddie D, on Wild Wonder, Greg Gilchrist. Is that right?
Greg and my dad are very, very tight, and, I got the pony him in the morning time. You know, I was an assistant trainer for my dad, and boy, what a horse he was. I mean, he was just a massive, strong thing. As a matter of fact, Louis Herrigi was getting on him in the morning for Greg, and we were backtracking one morning, and he latched onto my knee, and he gave me a bruise that was there for probably 2 months.
I love it. you know, it's funny. We watch as horses being ponied. We see them savage the pony. It doesn't occur that you get savaged too sometimes. Oh, you're riding the pony.
Yeah, everybody earns their money. So yeah. A lot of good guys, though.
That's great. You know, we haven't talked to you since last spring. And, you know, what else, you know, how did you manage otherwise through pandemic? And, you know, talk a little bit about where things stand. And I know that, you know, you're open up to some new business, and whether it's in San Francisco or, you know, talk a little bit about how things stand for you.
Well, I think the best part about, you know, this whole 2020 COVID thing is that guys like me get to go up and or get to get out and get to work every day. You know, we're not, the horses can't take care of themselves, obviously. So we still get to get out and breathe fresh air and go to work and do our regular routines. And granted, it's you know, there's some restrictions and things that everybody are going through, but I still get to stay halfway sane by being able to get out and do it. And that's been the best part. I was fortunate enough to be on the Derby Trail this year with the new Door, and you know, we could have got in it. He didn't really pan out the way we'd liked, but at the same time, he didn't pull up as good as we'd hoped to after the Ellis Park Derby, and it just wasn't right to go on with him. So he's kicked out in pasture right now, and you know, it's been trying. I got to hand it to the racetracks that have stayed open for training, one, to allow us to keep the horses fit. And at the same time, the owners across the United States need to be commended for sure, because people have stuck in there and paid their bills, and we're getting the opportunity to run for the prize money right now. And, you know, they're the backbone of this business. So without them, nobody has much work out there. So it's great. It's great knowing that people are still backing you, and at the same time, you know, just the fact that we're getting to race now, and there's not a lot of fans, and it's tough. I mean, it's not real fun to go over to the races and not have the fans cheering on and everything, but
sure.
I really think that we're getting good exposure through TV and betting and things of that nature now, so hopefully it'll create some new fans when we'll be able to go back to racing, but you know, it's tough on everybody as far as, you know, one person gets sick and things could turn around, can turn the other way real easy, you know. And I've been fortunate enough that the tracks that I've been going to, the management's been great, and they're keeping things open the best they can, and we're allowed to run. So there are some positives in this negative time.
Well, and you've had, the opportunity through the summer, you had a string at Del Mar, and it included a terrific performance that, you brought up Ann O'Dor, who I was going to ask about, but you also had Baja Sur, the Washington bred, get graded stake placement in that green flash. That was a nice effort.
Yeah, Baja, he's a super horse. He might be one of the only horses. John Mariansky got me started in this business, gave me my first shot to go out on my own years ago when I was Grant Forrester's assistant. And, that guy's been absolutely super, buying yearlings year in and year out. And one time, every now and again, he says, buy me the best colt in the sale. And I told him, don't leave here without that horse. And kind of funny because he's like, well, what should I spend on him? I said, doesn't matter. He's the best colt in the sale. Just go buy him. And sure enough, he bought him. And Jerry Schneider and Gail, maybe the nicest people in the world, they bought half of him, and they're partners with John and Janine. And so, so special for him to be two-year-old of the year, three-year-old of the year, and then horse of the year as a three-year-old. And we set our sights on coming to California because he's a Washington bred, but a Cal sired horse, so he's paid into that Golden State series, and
nice.
We wanted the opportunity to run on turf, and ironically, his best buyer's on the synthetic, and we just haven't had a chance to really get him back on it since then. They've canceled some stakes that we've been ready for at Golden Gate due to COVID and closures and things, so right now we're pointing him towards the California flag at Santa Anita, and we're hoping that that could either transition into Lost in the Fog if they run it at Golden Gate, or the Harris Farm Stakes that he ran second in last year could possibly be run at Golden Gate, they're telling me. And then there's another 100 grander going 7/8 at Del Mar in November or something like that too. But I will tell you this, this horse can go a mile, and I've seen him do his workouts in the morning. We just haven't had the best opportunity to get him there because I've been running him 5/8, and then the Cal Cup Classic was 1/8. So that was a little bit undoable for a horse you're training for speed to stretch out in 3 weeks to do that. So at some point, you'll see Baja Sur going 1 mile on the turf, I think.
Nice. Nice.
Yeah.
You also, I do want to mention, you also took a shot in the La Jolla with a Journey to Freedom. And I think also there was that Mucho Amor had a stake try.
Yeah, she had a tough go. She got steadied. Otherwise, I think that filly's going to be graded stakes place last time. I mean, I know nobody in the race was a match for Jerry's filly. But the idea is to try to get her some graded stakes place. Mr. Mowat is a wonderful, wonderful person, and he buys fillies and most of the time resells them. So we were going to run in the Chillingsworth this coming weekend, but Santa Anita's canceled their races, but they've recarded it for August 25th, the following week. So she'll be having a workout here at Golden Gate soon, and then we'll come down and give it another shot down there.
How do things look, in terms of the smoke and the air quality? How do things look to run this weekend at Golden Gate?
Well, we're hoping. I think yesterday it was a pretty nice day late in the afternoon. We even saw some blue sky. Today looks a little bit better in the morning time, and they're allowing us to train again and whatnot. So, we just got to keep our fingers crossed. As of right now, I think they're planning on running, but at the same time, to tell you the truth, I left the state to be in Washington for a while, and I haven't been able to get back in the track because I had the COVID test yesterday, so I'm waiting for my results to get back into Golden Gate. So I'm just kind of sitting hanging in my condo listening to my guys tell me how the horses have gone. So, but I really think, looking at the weather, there's a good shot for us this week, certainly better than last week.
Well, good. And let me, on that topic, there is already cards set for Thursday and Friday at Golden Gate. And you've got some horses entered, in a couple of maidens. You got a chance with a horse that came to you from Phil D'Amato, Too Hot for Curlin, who you know, has actually made plenty of money in a number of tries, and you've also got Diametric in the same spot in the seventh. What about those maidens coming up on Friday?
Well, you know, I've only had Too Hot for Curlew for a couple weeks. Still sent her up in great shape. Told me she's a very easy horse to train. They were trying to just lighten the load on her a little bit and see if they can't get her heading in the right direction a little bit. So I just breezed her half a mile, and she was well in hand. And I was looking forward to running her, to tell you the truth. And, you know, she's been, just like you said, very easy to handle. She goes out there and does her job. And got Evan Roman riding her, so I'm hoping she'll certainly run well for all of us. And then Diametric, she's a horse that, boy, she stumbled bad and darn near went down in the race before, and we've been kind of letting her stay up a little bit closer to the pace, and I'm thinking, you know, we might try to anchor her the first time this time and see if she'll sit back and make a big run at them horses. She's a big, strong filly, and, you know, hopefully she can reach her potential at some point.
Let me also ask, in the next race on Friday, I do see that you've got Ilapani, Warrior's Reward filly that has really outrun her auction number. She was a $3,000 purchase. She's made $50,000, and she's coming off of a starter allowance win. Seems like you know, the summer was good to her, and feels like she's, with added maturity, feels like she's still moving forward.
Yeah, she's a horse that's a kind of a taller, lanky thing. She was hard to keep weight on when she was a young horse, because she was just, you know, she needed to come a lot further. And I believe that filly's starting to get better as she gets older. She's been very sound for me, and at the same time, I think she's carrying better flesh right now than she ever has in her life. So I'm kind of expecting her, and she's showing it in her form. She's getting better with age. So she's finally starting to come around. Took her a long time to get the job done. And then when she did, you know, she really got it done nice. And to tell you the truth, we certainly would, you know, we don't want to hesitate to start her on dirt again, because her dirt races have just been over the top for her. She's run really good on the synthetic, and but at this time, we're trying to protect her just a touch to see if she keeps going in that right direction, too. But, boy, you know, the Henlein's a new client for me that Alistair Roden pushed my way, and those people have been great. She was one of the first horses I got for him, and, you know, they're out of Vernal, Utah, and they've become very good friends. So certainly wanting to do well for them with her.
Well, Blaine Wright, a lot of good things clearly ahead, and a tremendous job getting another Twist of Fate ready off of almost a year and a half of various timeouts and wins a Long Acres Mile. And as we discussed, whether it was with Frank or in years past with the variety of great Northwestern horsemen that really treasure a Long Acres Mile victory. Well done, and continued success. And anybody looking for, you know, to get started and get going with somebody in good hands with Blaine Wright. He's got the horses in Southern California and in San Francisco, and also up in the Northwest. So really any kind of level of horse, and all the different surface opportunities with the Tapita at Golden Gate, and everything there for you. Blaine, best of luck. Hope to talk soon.
Yes, sir. Anytime, Steve. Appreciate you having me on.
Not at all. Blaine Wright, everybody, and a Long Acres Mile added to the resume. We'll stay right here, 20 minutes to fill out on this Tuesday, and a carryover, 50,000 at Indiana, and then the penultimate day of racing at Kentucky Downs, and I reached for Ed DeRosa to give us some opinions. And Ed, describing today at Kentucky Downs as penultimate, that's an Ed DeRosa word.
I do enjoy that word, yeah, especially like when we get to the penultimate race on the penultimate day, which is the 10th today.
Well, and we have to get Lidlifter in there, too.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Word soup for sure is my favorite. And today I'm calling myself the carpetbagger of the Midwest pick five.
Well, we do have two fun ones, and we're going to talk about them, and we'll go through and offer opinions. But let me first take the opportunity to thank you again, and of course Scott Shapiro and James. We had fun as if it was a normal derby. It wasn't a normal derby, but how about some postscript thoughts to Oaks Derby weekend?
Yeah, I mean, the Derby, like really any race, but it's certainly one that can humble you on the national stage. And the thing I keep going back to about this Derby, Steve, is something the Hammer, Tommy Massis, said, and I kind of blew him off. He tweeted, like, what's everyone in a hurry for to get their picks in? And I was on Art Collector at the time, and then he didn't enter a few days later. And then I did think Tis the Law was the best and was, you know, more than happy to try to get live to him on some big numbers, which they did end up being big. Unfortunately, I wasn't live. But without a doubt, Authentic, if you just handicapped this race from the PPs, took the scratches out, he was the horse that absolutely figured to move up with the scratches. He got some post relief with them, with three horses coming out, and then both King Guillermo and I'm drawing a blank on who the other scratch was with Finnick the Fierce. Who was it?
Well, Thousand Words, Art Collector, King Guillermo, Finnick.
That's right. Yes, with those horses coming out, that absolutely moved Authentic up. And look at the PPs, and they're pretty similar to Tis the Law. The one loss, his was more recent, so I guess more people forgave it. And by no means am I saying I should have jumped ship, but he absolutely made sense as a $20 horse. And it's just, you know, another lesson in a sport wrought with them that, you know, you got to make sure you absorb new information. And you actually even mentioned it as well during our seminar Derby yep. week when our collector was out. That was something you pointed out about previous years with scratches and how that affected the field. And, you know, a lot of us just kind of figure, well, we're done, and you're not. And, you know, I don't know how much that cost me with Tis the Law second at 3-5 and Mr. Big News third. I probably would have needed all there, but certainly on the win end in your multi-race bets, Authentic had to move up with the scratches at 9-1. And yeah. I didn't do that.
How about on Friday? How did you handle? Because certainly an alternative, approach paid all kinds of dividends on Friday. And She Dares the Devil was in a lot of ways similar to Authentic. If you were open to, you know, various MOs, the way the races could unfold. And I mean, I got a little lucky because I used her as a lone C in everything, including the Oaks Derby double. And that was the key for me to have a nice weekend was, you know, saying, you know, she can win this if she takes one more step forward. And that's exactly what she ended up doing.
Yep. No, I just more disappointment on my end. I mean, I did see her as a B, but I was so strongly in speeches camp, and you know, wasn't her day. But all week, you know, I felt like Amin would be an underlay given the distance and odds on. Swiss Skydiver, I certainly respected, but just had some questions if she was going to be capable of her best, and would any sort of setback put her in a position to win at 2-1. I thought she might be an underlay. And then I just ended up approaching the race with Speech as a single, whereas maybe the right idea was, okay, you're against what about 90% of the win pool. Is this a spot where you do want to extend even beyond a horse you really like? And She Dares the Devil certainly was the next option, and 15-1. I mean, in retrospect, that's just one of those prices where you understand why she was that, but how do you not capitalize given your opinion? Sounds like you did. I didn't. No real regrets. I planted my flag with Speech, and if she had won, this would be a different conversation, but She Dares the Devil certainly at 15-1, given my opinions of the top two betting choices, may have been an opportunity I missed.
Well, the beauty of this game is that the money we make today at Kentucky Downs in Indiana, it's going to spend the exact same way that Oaks and Derby Day money would have spent.
Exactly. it is one of the true great things about the horse playing side of racing in particular. Obviously, purse money spends the same too, but it does vary a little more than the wagering pool money, which, you know, 5-to-1 anywhere is $12.
Exactly. Exactly. Let's utilize the next 10 minutes, and we'll go through Indiana and Kentucky. And Indiana starts just a tick ahead of Kentucky today. The pick 5, 4:12 Eastern at Indiana, and then 4:27 Eastern, race 7 at Kentucky Downs. So we'll go through Indiana first, take about 5-6 minutes with each one. Ed, I thought that this was a very treacherous sequence, especially because I don't think that the short-priced favorites in the middle of the sequence are reliable. How do you start this out?
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. I do think, and you know, my time following pick fives and payouts and Will Pays versus the pick four, et cetera, always trepidatious with the big single. I think people either think, man, if I get through this, I can have some fun later. Or conversely, they don't like to be out. So, you know, at times I think you have the horse player as well who maybe spreads a little deeper in the first leg than needed. I agree with you on some of the favorites after the first leg. I do think New Boss is probably one I'm going to lean on. One on debut for Brett Calhoun. He's a 9% debut trainer, so you know it's not like he's automatic. Ships up from Lone Star, which I've never had a problem betting these horses when they ship to Churchill from Lone Star, so certainly not going to be worried about it into Indiana Grand, and you get to Sean Parker. So this just seems to me the one to lean on because I absolutely want to have some options in races 6-7, 6 and 7 in particular, where the morning line favorite in leg 2 is 3-5, Kona Kai, which I've heard great things about Cobra Kai on Netflix. But Kona Kai is not going to be for me. 0-for-4 maiden and just seems to be wind shy to this point in her career. And at that short of a price, and I haven't looked at the designer figs yet, but certainly the ones in the PP's birth net I use, she's no complete standout. And the first time starter, Sugar and Sass, the dam won first time out. And we've already mentioned Brett Calhoun. He's fine with debut runners. You know, he's not Wesley Ward, but he can get one to pop. And Sugar and Sass, I would say, is my top pick. But I'm definitely looking to spread beyond the 3-5 favorite in leg 2.
No, I agree. And I did write that New Boss did feel like, for small budgets, it does feel like a lean. But I'm going to tell you, even that first leg, you know, these are 2-year-olds and they're all lightly raced. And you got people like Kim Hammond. If one thing this summer has taught me that I wasn't as aware of as I probably should have been, Kim Hammond can train, and you know we had that fun quiz somebody asked early in the summer at some point about the winningest female trainer in the country, and I went Kathleen O'Connell. You were pushing the Kim Hammond story, and boy, good job. She is a force to reckon with.
No, she is, and I remember when I moved down here and sort of discovered Ellis and Fairmount on Tuesdays. I mean, she's a terror with the condition book, and she spots him right, and she's I don't know if she's won a title at Turfway. She's certainly been up there, so she knows this circuit and can win in bunches. And like I said, I think for me, maybe the first leg is a lean, but I mean, you're absolutely right. This horse ran off the screen, won by 7 lengths at a price, kind of went ignored. That was state bred, so maybe that's the difference here, but certainly, if you're looking to push, you know, Kim gets a ton, and it's typically one I'll look at when, you know, in other races where I feel like, well, I don't like the favorite, but no really strong opinion who I can win. For whatever reason, it seems unfashionable, Steve, just in general talking, like, you know, you'll hear people, I like betting a certain jock or trainer. And, you know, flat betting, I kind of get like, okay, you know, that's not for me. But if you're playing certain circuits or pick fives, I absolutely think it's essential to know which trainers you don't want to leave off at a price if you're against the favorite. By no means am I saying always bet X trainer.
Right.
But Kim is someone, if you're against the favorite and she's sitting there at 8-1 and you're already 2 or 3 deep, that's where I'm just looking to add a $20 horse trained by the right person.
Well, she's also 11 for 24 with Sammy Bermudez. I mean, you got to be kidding. 42% with a $7 ROI with Bermudez. That's been going on all summer. I mentioned the Hammond Bermudez tie-in a couple of weeks ago. That second leg, going to mention Honorable Memory, who is cutting back and going dirt to turf for Mark Eubley, who gets this horse back. Steve Asmussen had a start with the Honor Code Homebred by Katie Rich. I thought this second leg was plenty tricky. You like sugar and sass? There's more sugar in this race. Turn me to Sucre, which is French for sugar. The Billy Harden horse who showed speed might be okay. The 15-1. This is why this is such a treacherous sequence. Third leg, State Bred Nickel Claimers, and the obvious horse to beat is Wing and Wheel for Randy Klopp. But love that surprise drops down. And I'll give you a 10-1 shot to look at. How about Mike Lauer putting In a Fog back in against State Bred competition? Has been running against Open in Ohio at Belterra, and before that at Will Rogers, and now gets Restricted Company back. A little sneaky In a Fog. So I'm using 6-7-1 in that third leg.
Yeah, and the win two back at Belterra was closer than the pace than what we saw in the 6 furlong. So I like a horse who, you know, maybe people look at that last race and say off form, but to me does his best running, you know, closer, and maybe gets that here. I thought Portobello's Hero was worthy of a look.
Loose on the lead
up for Hammond, but that to me is a major speed threat in this race.
All right, the last two legs, because I do want to get a couple Kentucky Downs opinions in. We talked about the short-priced favorites that might be vulnerable. Saturday night for Brad Cox adds Lasix, coming off of a bullet, preparing for this, even money. Okay, but I'm not leaving Mishpucha off of my ticket, not just because it's a great Yiddish word that means family.
It's a great word.
It's Yiddish, and I didn't get a chance to talk to Bill Down, so I'm going to let him. I can't remember. I don't think he got the pronunciation right in August, but maybe I'll send him a text. Mishpucha is the 10 horse.
I would add, I kind of liked what I saw from the pedigree of Abby Swan at 20-1.
Hmm.
We'll see what the board says. I wish I was more the type that can pick out a live one just looking at a simulcast speed, but the trainer 17% with first time starters doesn't start him on the turf too often, but nevertheless that's the right percentage to say this one can run. And I mean, you look at the pedigree, certainly the dam side with the parentheses let you know maybe turf, but you know, looking up with the dam and her second dam did, they won early and they won sprinting, and I think Abby Swan's dangerous at a huge number.
That's interesting. I made note of two firsters. Helen Pitts has got Chakra for Cardinal Farm, a homebred Munnings filly, and there's plenty of pedigree power. Helen a little better in a second start. That's also the case with Kevin Fletcher, who's got Little Bird Flash, a flashback filly out of a Tisnow mare that also manages to lure Deshaun Parker, but there's some pedigree strength in there too. But I think most people are going to be focused on the 4 and the 10 to get to the nightcap, and the nightcap is really treacherous. This is a well-matched first-level allowance bunch, and Laraz is probably the horse to beat for Brad Cox, and I had Michael Ann Ewing on earlier. She loves Spun Easy in here, but I thought that Rudy Brissett with Tomara is okay. And I picked Timeless Rose, whose performance in that allowance, that non-winners at two, that was a bit of a new breakthrough top. And Timeless Rose might make another step forward for Anthony Granitz, an 8-1. This is a tremendous race, as good as anything you're going to see today at Kentucky Downs.
And you didn't even mention my pick, Spartanka.
Spartanka.
Somewhat class relief, I guess, out of it. Well, yeah, that was a pretty salty race. But dirt, sprinting, just has the one turf route. That doesn't look great, but, this family is amazing. Kind Words is out of Cara Raffaella. I just think there's a lot of class here. And, you know, for whatever reason, Mike hasn't tested this one on turf. But I think it's 6-1 in a competitive field. And, again, it's a top pick. It's not, you know, like I'm a single Spartanka. But I do think she's dangerous and certainly going to be on all my tickets.
We'll look for your ABC grid. And, Ed,
it's
we got
coming.
The lightning round. We're looking forward to it. I'll recirculate it. And the lightning round, pick a winner, one horse, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, at Kentucky Downs, 7th.
I'm going with Finite in the nightcap. I think Steve isn't really known for turf, but he's more than capable. And he's actually had a good string at Kentucky Downs this meet. Probably a function of not bringing the whole barn to Saratoga. I think she's dangerous here off the layoff sprinting.
I agree. And she won here last year, don't forget.
That's right.
Pick a horse in the 10th.
I like Red Ghost a little bit, 3-1.
Yep.
Speed typically, you don't think of Kentucky Downs that way, but inside, after they moved the rail on Saturday and then the impromptu off days, I think that one could steal it down inside for Wesley Ward.
Mississippi, she's even money.
That to me is the single, I think, as much as I hate to eat the heavy chalk. No, you're going to go a little deeper.
English Affair and Overthinking, I think, are right within there. And the fact that Dickinson chose this spot over Toronto and the Canadian the other day with Theodora B. I think that race is more competitive than it looks. How about in the maiden special eighth race?
I went with Horsey's Run before. I think Be Fast is interesting for Jack Sisterson, being by English Channel. Sprinted on the dirt in Indiana. Can't imagine that was ever this one's game, being out of AP Indy. Still a sprint, but 6.5, we know, plays longer Kentucky Downs. And I like that this one has a start. I ran a poll, and Kentucky Downs is actually the second worst track for debut runners in terms of win percentage. Obviously, it's a race-by-race thing, but it's tough to win there on debut, so I went with Be Fast.
No, I can see that. And, Train to Artemis, Wesley Ward, Ramsey's have had a good meet. Momentous Miss caught my eye, Scooter Hughes, and Reeve McGahey, Persevering, 8-1. That's a good race. Be Fast for Jack, like you said. A good race. Ed, this was tremendous. Not at all. Appreciate the visit. Get those selections up, and we'll make sure everybody's got them in their hands. I've got to do my ticket building, and we'll have it up at the website. Thanks to Nicole Russo, Michael Anderson, Ewing, Andrew Offerman, Dr. Alday, Blaine Wright, and Eddie D, EJXD2. Good luck today, everybody. Talk to you tomorrow.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Our Pennsylvania breeding program was, of course, impacted by the pandemic. Now, with our country getting back to work, we'd like to again talk about our program, the best in North America. Our breeder awards will remain up to 50% for PA-sired PA breds. Owner bonuses will also stay at up to 40%. Restricted races will again be run at all three PA tracks, and PA Day at the Races will return. I'm Brian Sanfratello. For more, please visit PABred.com.